Hi everybody, welcome back to another episode of Midwest Madness, your true crime cult conspiracy and cryptid podcast. I'm Emily.
And I'm Danielle. And for some weird reason, that sounded really weird.
Did it?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, you did. I don't know, it's just something didn't feel right about it.
Huh.
Well, it's just been a fucking 72 hours.
It's been a weird few days. So, I went to a 2-hour Catholic Mass this morning.
You look cute.
Thanks. This is my Catholic Mass outfit.
Is it because it's the same color nuns wear?
As my soul.
With the, I just like, the white. Yeah, the black. White. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cute. It
was an experience.
Oh, yeah. One of my friends had a Catholic wedding and I was in it and I was like.
Two of my friends did
this
too.
This is weird as shit.
Yeah.
Do you take communion?
When
you
no.
I do.
Just,
I don't know if technically I'm not supposed to.
You're not supposed to.
But, well, oh, hold on.
No, you weren't confirmed.
But I was baptized.
Yeah, it doesn't
no,
matter.
I was confirmed.
Not Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yes, I was.
In fifth grade?
Yeah, in third grade.
In high school?
They do it in third grade.
No, they do it in high school. It's ninth grade.
We do it
no,
in
no,
high
no,
school.
It's eighth grade.
We
no,
do it, yeah.
No, 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 it's 10th grade, sorry. Because I was friends with all the hockey boys and they had to go to confirmation my 10th grade year.
I've been first communion twice.
No, confirmed.
Oh, first communion, yeah. That's different.
Yeah.
Yeah, technically at some they still say you can, so I do. And you know what? If that's my biggest sin, I think I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, I'm good now for the next 4 years.
Hey,
I don't have to go to church ever again. But I am going to make a book series. I'm copywriting this right now. Nobody take my idea.
Okay.
The Lutheran's Guide to Catholic Church.
Yes, that's genius.
I have no idea stand what the up, fuck's going
kneel,
on.
Stand up, kneel. Stand up,
and
kneel.
That's going to cover baptism, wedding. Funerals, weddings, mass.
I love it. I will help be a researcher for
because
you.
Because I'm like, I have no idea what the hell's going on right now. There's just so much going on. Okay.
Dude, stop it.
I'm going to get into my story this week just because we're tired.
Yeah.
We just want to relax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was playing Hogwarts Legacy.
Nice.
And you interrupted me for this.
Sorry.
That's okay. I don't mind doing this.
Okay, so mine's a little bit shorter, but here we go. This week, we're going down to the state of Missouri for the abduction of Angela Hammond.
Does not ring a bell.
Okay. Clinton, Missouri is a small, quiet farming town on the far western side of the state. In 2020, the population of the town was just about 9,000. So, like, comparable to where we live?
I can look. I'll look it up.
No, I mean, it doesn't really matter. I'm just saying, like, for your own knowledge.
That seems about right.
The place was extremely safe and felt like a town that was immune to any sort of crime. But on April 4th, 1991, that sense of security was shattered when then 20-year-old Angie, Hammond was abducted. Angie was a very popular, outgoing girl that most people in town knew and loved. Her fiancé was Rob Schaefer, and he was also very popular in town. He was known, like, as a star athlete in high school.
Okay.
So it just seemed like they were, like, high school sweethearts.
A little bit of a power couple.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know how it was back in the day.
I wasn't popular, so.
No, I mean in, like, the 80s. Like, I feel like, or in the 90s. Like, I feel like that's, like, something that happens way more back then.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really feel like high schools have, like, an it girl and an it guy anymore. You know what I mean? I could be wrong, but like,
I mean,
I feel like it's groups of people.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
like,
I don't think there's like, from my grade, I don't think there's somebody that I could say to like every person that I still talk to, which is honestly like not a few, that I could be like, oh, do you remember XYZ? And they'd be like, oh yeah, totally. You know, I think you could say, oh, do you remember XYZ? They hung out with this person, and that person. And they'd be like, oh yeah, I remember, you know, the third person or whatever. So I think you're right. I don't think there's, like, one person anymore.
Right. Okay. That day, the two of them had attended a barbecue together when Angie dropped Rob off at his parents' home that night after. So that made no sense. They had attended a barbecue.
They went to a barbecue.
She dropped him off
home
at about 10 p.m.
Parents. Okay,
at
got
his
it.
Parents' house. He had to watch his little brother that night. So Angie promised to call him a bit later, and the two of them had planned to maybe meet back up again, which I find kind of weird, considering it was 10 p.m. and
But if you think about Allie and John, they spent the night at each other's houses all the time. So maybe
different time.
Yeah.
Not as acceptable back then.
That's true, I suppose. And not, I mean, they just ended up crashing wherever they were at. Like, they would crash at friends' houses and stuff, too. So it's like, I guess I don't, but I guess you're right, it is.
Well, it's just like it's 10 p.m.
Yeah.
And, like, he has to go babysit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to just get back together at midnight and just, like, hang out again? I don't know. Seemed weird to me. But, and I don't know. Anyway. Around 11:45 p.m. that night, Angie did give Rob a call from a payphone that was located in the middle of town off of Jefferson Street and 2nd Street in the parking lot outside of the Food Barn store. Again, I have no idea, like, what she was doing between 10 and 11:45. I don't know if she was cruising around town. I don't know if she met up with other friends. I don't know if she went home and then went back out. I don't know why she called from a payphone and not from her own house.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
I don't know why she was at this spot.
Okay.
And there's going to, like, something's going to come up later where you're going
to... Is this an unsolved?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, where my God, mine is too. Going to be... Where you're going to kind of understand why I'm thinking all this is kind of weird. So okay. Just like pause okay. On that. So Andrew told Rob that she was too tired to meet up with him again like they had originally planned on doing and told him that she was just going to go home for the night and take a bath at 11:45. While the two talked, Andrew began to notice that there was an old pickup truck that was circling the parking lot. She mentioned it to Rob and at first he said that she didn't seem too concerned about it but still felt like it was weird enough to at least say something.
Mm-hmm.
She told him it was a older model green Ford, but yeah, that's all she was able to really tell.
Okay.
Then the truck parked next to the payphone booth, and Angie began to get more concerned. So it sounds like there was two phone booths right next to each other.
Okay. That kind of makes sense, like facing each other almost.
Like side to side.
Okay.
Yeah. She said that. Oh, so she described, then she could see the guy. So she began describing mm-hmm. him
okay.
to Rob, and she described him as, quote, a filthy bearded man, end quote.
Oh, that's...
I would never want to be described as a filthy bearded man.
No.
But she said that he used the phone next to her, then all of a sudden took out a flashlight and began searching the ground as if he had dropped something and he was looking for it. So Rob thought maybe he needed to use, like, the phone she was on because the one he tried to use maybe wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So she asked him and the man, like, replied, no, I don't need the phone. So she's like, okay, whatever. So then the two just carried on their conversation, Rob and Angie.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden Rob heard Angie scream from the other side of the phone and then the line went dead.
That's not concerning at all.
So Rob immediately jumped into action. The phone booth that Angie was located at was only 7 blocks from where Rob's parents' house was located.
Okay.
Which, again, like, why not just go to the house?
Yeah.
But, I mean.
It's just you're trying to figure out what the thought process was. Right. Like, you're not blaming her
for
this.
No, not at all.
Trying to just figure out, like, why were these choices made.
Right. And I guess Rob said that, so there's an Unsolved Mysteries episode on this. Okay. I didn't watch it, but some of the articles I had, like, had quotes from it.
Quotes, okay.
Yeah. And I guess one of them was that, like, he didn't even, like, hang up the phone. He just dropped it and, like, immediately ran.
Okay.
Which, like, good for him.
Yeah.
So while driving over to the payphone booth, he noticed a truck speeding by him going in the opposite direction. And then he heard Angie scream Robbie out the window of the truck.
Oh my God.
At him as they were passing each other. So he immediately, like,
whipped a U-E, right?
Like, turns around, like, starts backing up, whatever, and starts to chase the pickup truck through downtown Clinton. But unfortunately, Rob didn't realize that when he threw his car into reverse to turn around and chase the truck, he greatly damaged the transmission, and he was only able to chase the truck for about 2 miles before the transmission failed, and he was unable to follow it anymore.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Angie's car was found still in the parking lot next to the phone booth. While Rob was able to tell the police that the pickup truck was a 60s to 70s Ford model green
mm-hmm.
with a decal of water or an outdoor scene completely covering the rear window, possibly with a white top and possibly with damage to the front left fender. Other witnesses described seeing a similar truck with a Caucasian male driving around the telephone booth around the same time that Angie disappeared. Angie's kidnapping sent shockwaves through the small town of Clinton, as well as the state of Missouri as a whole. Both police and citizens in the area began searching far and wide for her, and they did, like, both land and air searching. Okay. But, unfortunately, nothing was ever found. Police believe that their best chance to find Angie would be to locate that pickup truck, and because of the identifying features, they believe that it would be able to, they'd be able to find it pretty quickly, especially with something with, like, a decal, like, mm-hmm. completely covering the back
window. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. And not many cars have that.
Right.
And it's also green, which I feel like is kind of different for a car.
I was thinking like a dark green, like a foresty green.
But think about how many green, even dark green cars. I can't honestly say I don't see that many dark green cars on the road anymore.
That's true. I would love a dark green car. That's my favorite color.
That would be cool. So police went as far as having the Missouri State Highway Patrol do a computer search on all registered vehicles in the state. And with their help, they're able to narrow it down to 1,600 possibilities that match both the color of the truck as well as if it had any sort of decal or mural on the back truck window.
They have that registered?
That's another thing. I was like, I don't know how they have that registered.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So.
I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Don't know. But none of these leads ended up panning out, which is so unfortunate. And with police investigation investigating based off of really only Rob's testimony, it didn't take long for Rob to become a suspect himself, of obviously. Course. But Angie's family was certain that he had nothing to do with it. They had known Rob his whole life, and they had never doubted for a minute that he had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I know I just said that, but thankfully police did agree, and within a week Rob was cleared of any wrongdoing, so he wasn't a suspect for long.
Okay, good.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Okay, now
that
here's
be a really
my
stressful week though.
Yeah. Here's my thing on why this all kind of doesn't make sense to me is, so she was 4 months pregnant. Yeah, which is terrible. But now do you kind of understand why I feel like it's a little weird to like be out at 11:45 p.m. in the middle of town?
Yeah, I think even if she wasn't pregnant, it's still kind of weird. Like,
I just think this like adds it.
Yeah, it does add a layer to it for sure.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know. Which is terrible, obviously.
Really sad.
Yeah. So, police were able to connect Angie's kidnapping with two other unsolved cases that were within 100 miles of Clinton.
Oh, damn.
The first had occurred 3 months earlier in Max Creek, Missouri, which is about an hour and 15 minutes from Clinton. On January 19th, 1991, 42-year-old Trudy Darby was working alone in a convenience store. She called her son to report a suspicious man hanging around the outside. Trudy's son decided to just, like, head over there.
Yeah.
Just to, like, make sure everything things were okay. And yeah, and just check in and make sure she was feeling comfortable. And the man had left. But when he arrived, he found the place deserted, even though he had just spoken to his mom 10 minutes earlier. 2 days later, Trudy's body was found on the riverbank about 10 miles from her work. She had been fatally shot twice in the head. A month later, on February 28th, 30-year-old Cheryl Ann Keeney was reported missing in Nevada, Missouri, which is about an hour from Clinton and just about an hour and a half from Max Creek. So they kind of make a triangle with Clinton being the top point.
Okay.
Nevada being the left point and then Max Creek being the right point.
Okay.
For others. She also vanished from a convenience store that she was working at. She had closed up the store around 10 p.m. that night and was walking to her car. Nearby was a 3M manufacturing plant that had people arriving to work around the same time she was leaving. So they must do like shifts, second shift, whatever.
Yeah.
And the people who were arriving to work heard her scream around 10:15 p.m. And that is the last time anyone heard or saw, I guess, technically, Cheryl Ann.
It's interesting that they've all been, like, high-risk kidnappings.
Right.
Because, like, two convenience stores, one where people are literally walking into another building, like, right across the street.
Yeah.
And then another that was literally
in the middle
of town.
Yeah,
in
the
middle
of
town.
With people driving around.
Yeah.
Because people did witness, like, the truck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very interesting.
Really interesting that they're such high-risk kidnappings. I wonder if that's, like, part of the thrill, though.
And unfortunately, Cheryl Ann is also still missing to this day, just like Angie is. Okay,
so no body was found.
Right. So we still don't have any answers in Angie's case, but the most recent-ish update came on the 30th anniversary of Angie's abduction. On the Clinton, Missouri Police Department's Facebook page, they posted that the case was still open and there were several active leads being considered. So this kind of differentiates from them thinking that all these cases are linked a little bit. So I'm thinking now they're kind of not thinking.
Okay, so hers previously they thought that there was a connection and now but some now, evidence has kind of come.
Yeah, and they're like, thinking no, maybe not. So okay. On the Clinton, Missouri Police Department's Facebook page, they posted that, oh, I already said that. Jesus Christ. One of them originated from the Lake of the Ozarks region. So apparently a confidential informant's testimony in court was a key part in stopping a big illegal drug operation. Police say that when the identity of the informant was revealed during the case, he got a letter with cut and paste characters, you know, like the like in a movie.
Like an old school.
Yeah. So the Facebook post had a copy of the letter posted, and the note identifies the informant by the number they were given to help keep his identity a secret before the court case. So here's what it reads. Okay, so it says, quote, hello, number, blank. They redact the numbers and the other some other names in here. So the blanks are the redacted parts.
Okay.
We know who you are, number blank. People like you deserve what you get. We know where your foxy daughter is at. She will see us soon. Tell blank she has our deepest sympathy in her future loss. Goodbye, blank. End quote. So the informant's wife and daughter were both living in Clinton at the time of Angie's abduction, and her name was also Angela, and they looked kind of similar.
Oh damn.
So the letter arrived the same day that Angie was kidnapped.
Oh damn.
So police believe that the case could unfortunately be that of mistaken identity.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. So that update was back in April of 2021, and I don't have any other information since then. So I don't know if this is like the lead that they're still going with or if they're on to something else. The case is still open and active. They're still working it.
Okay.
Which is good. So yeah, hopefully they'll be able to get some answers. If I had to guess, like that mistaken identity thing kind of seems pretty
likely.
Yeah. Very likely. I mean, what are the odds that they have the same name? The letter revives the same day and they look identical, and the note literally says where we know where your foxy daughter is at, she will see us soon,
right? And they live in the same town. That's not the
same town.
A big town.
No, 9,000.
Yeah,
well, and that was in 2020. I don't know what it was in 1991.
Probably smaller,
I would assume. Yeah. So that is the whole story of Angie Hammond and her kidnapping and disappearance. Very interesting, because it just was like, it almost seems like everything that kind of could have gone wrong kind of went wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have thought this one could have been solved, especially with Rob being able to, like, see the car.
Right.
Oh, and man, the
guilt.
The guilt.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they talked about that in some of the articles. Like, yeah, I guess he had a very, very, very hard time.
I mean,
with her disappearance for a very long time, because I guess his big thing was, like, everything I read was like he had always promised to take care of her. He almost promised to take care of her. Like, every article, like, mentioned that.
Okay.
Like, his promise to take care of her, and he felt like he failed when.
Well, and then add on top of that, she's carrying your baby,
pregnant, and they're engaged. Like,
and like, so you, not only did you
lose your
the love of your life,
but your
future, but you're also
your child.
Your child.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
Very interesting one, because again, like, I feel like it's one that we should have some answers for and just don't. So my sources were CherylAnnKeeney.com, charlieproject.org, unsolved.com, and fox2now.com.
Our socials are mwmadnesspodcast@gmail.com for email, and that is also our Instagram, and then Midwest Madness Podcast group on Facebook. If you do not answer the questions, you will not be allowed into the group. I've declined two people in the last week because they did not answer the questions.
Got it.
Because I feel like that's spam. So if you want to be in the group, please just answer the questions. They're not difficult. it's like, who are we? Like, let's not, we say it every episode, who we are. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good week, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
Yeah, my first Tuesday of summer.
Oh, yay. Woo.
Crazy.
Do you have plans for this weekend?
This coming weekend, yeah. Mom and Dad are supposed to be going camping with their friends.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and get their bedroom painted because I stripped the wallpaper this weekend.
You're not going to go do something fun?
I don't think so. I might see if some, like, coworkers want to come hang out for a while on, like, Sunday or something. But, no. I'm going down to Iowa in July. I might be going to Pierre in July, too, but I don't know yet.
Cool. All right, everybody. Have a good week.
Bye.